are you? This is Glenn Coble, and you're listening to On the Air. And we're here with our naturalist, James Anderson. James, how are you doing?
Oh, pretty good.
All right, we're going to get the music out of here pretty soon. And, I'll do it right now.
That's it. That's it.
All right, James Anderson. We have him on the last Thursday of every month. And we talk about critters, and I love saying the word, and I think you probably saw it on
yes.
the message. I love saying the words flora and fauna. I don't know why that tickles me, but it does. But we talk about
flora. You sound smart when you say that.
Sounding is different than being.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
All right. Well, anyway, we're here on the air. That's the name of the program. We'd love to have you call if you have any questions, natural questions. James has answered questions that I didn't know were questions on the air.
We've got quite a few.
Yeah, we have. So give us a call at 740-383-9944. Thank you. That's bad when the guest has to remind you what your phone number is.
Sorry, I've been on here for 3 years. I think you're remembering.
You know it by now. 740-383-9944. All right, we're in midsummer. I
yeah.
guess this is what you'd call it. Yeah, midsummer.
Yeah, you would call it.
And one of the questions, now I have a new executive producer, as you know, my new puppy dog, Buddy, and he helped me with questions, but he forgot to write them down. So, he asked me to ask you, do animals act different when it gets really hot out?
Yes, they absolutely do.
What do they do? I mean, I think there are snakes, don't they go where they're cool rocks?
Yes, so we've heard of the term hibernation, right? When
yeah.
animals prepare for winter, for the cold.
Now, excavate?
Yes.
Excavate.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, so estivation is when it's too hot.
Yeah.
So a lot of reptiles and amphibians, since they're cold-blooded,
yeah.
they're not like us. They can't sweat to cool down.
Yeah.
So they have to find somewhere cool. Usually it's around water, underneath a log, a tree, anything like that. Because, yes, they can actually get too warm. And
cook
then actually,
themselves.
Basically, yeah, cook
yeah.
themselves and hurt their bodies.
Oh.
I just got back from vacation. We went to Florida, and one of my birthday gifts, my birthday was last Friday, and we went to the Everglades, and we went on an airboat tour.
Oh.
And we only saw one alligator, but if we were there sooner, probably about a month or two ago, we would have seen more because it was so warm out. They go almost to the
cold.
Bottom. Where it's like 4 or 5 feet down, where it's a lot cooler, because, again, if they stayed up on the top, they would probably, you know, fry. And
yeah.
It hurt
Yikes.
Themselves.
Well, that kind of proves Darwin's theory.
Survival of the fittest.
Survival of the fittest. You decided to go to Florida in July.
I did.
I'm surprised you're still alive.
It was like hot like yesterday, but the humidity was worse.
Was it really bad?
Yes.
See, actually, our humidity up here hasn't been too bad for the last week.
Yeah.
Which is nice. And the pollen hasn't been too bad. It's been mid to low mid. And
yeah.
so that's very helpful. Okay, so now we know that critters do extivate, is
yeah.
that right?
Yeah, estivation, estivate, yeah.
Estivate. And I had never heard that word, and when Buddy and I were trying to figure out what questions to ask you, that word happened to pop up.
Yeah,
and so.
Yeah. And your other animals, I mean, they're going to keep cool. They're going to, like your mammals and birds are obviously going to stay next to a water source, and maybe take a little swim.
Yeah.
Or so, but definitely activity definitely decreases
yeah,
a little bit.
That was my next question.
Like a day like yesterday. You don't see as many animals.
Well, I have also noticed that I don't hear as many birds out. Now, is that,
yeah.
am I making that up in my head, or?
Yeah, they're just trying to stay cool. Now, the insects, they're all out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're everywhere.
Yes.
Believe me, I've got scratch marks all over the place where I've been attacked by mosquitoes. Why are mosquitoes so heavy this year?
It fluctuates from year to year. It just depends on how the weather goes along. During your drought years, you usually don't have
yeah.
as many mosquitoes because they don't have many places to lay their eggs, and then, you know, their eggs develop into their pupa to adult forms. But then you got those summers where it rains constantly. Well, yes, it'll keep the mosquitoes away, but then once that rain stops, just for that short period of time, then the mosquitoes all come out at once, and then
yes.
you've got all this standing water, so then you get this huge explosion. So,
yeah.
again, it just fluctuates from year to year.
What critters could we keep or encourage in our backyards to get rid of those?
To get rid of mosquitoes?
Yeah.
There's quite a few things. Of course, there's your birds, like your swallows, your chimney swifts.
Ladybugs, do they help get rid of that?
No, ladybugs are more after aphids.
Okay, all right.
But some of your other insects you actually want is
praying mantis?
Maybe a praying mantis, but a dragonfly.
Oh,
yeah, dragonfly.
They eat
yes.
That.
Oh. They are the most vicious predator insect that we have here in Ohio. They said it's like almost like the bird of prey in the insect world.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, they'll attack other dragonflies, butterflies. I've seen them attack monarchs.
I've seen them attack me.
No, well, they're not really attacking.
No, they just bump into me.
They do, they do.
Yeah, I'm not a big dragonfly fan either. As you know, I'm not a big fan of most animals. I love all animals. I truly do love all animals. I just don't want to pick them up.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now we did start to talk about birds, and there is a problem going on with birds now. Tell our listeners what we need to do.
Yeah, so absolutely. So there is this new bird disease. There's actually no name for it right now because we really don't know much about it.
Bird pandemic?
Basically, yeah.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. It's mainly hit the eastern/midwest United States, including Ohio. I haven't heard any cases in Marion County, but some of the symptoms of this new disease is you'll see like the crustiness around the eyes, almost develops like a thick film. I saw a picture down in the in Kentucky from the Kentucky Division of Wildlife. It almost like glues their eyes shut, and in some cases, the eyes basically sink into the head.
Oh, jeez.
I know it sounds graphic, but that's just a symptom.
Yeah.
Another symptom is it's causing neurological damage. So it's causing them to act abnormal. And what I mean by abnormal, maybe yes, they could fall from the sky, but what I really mean is maybe they are flying in circles, or maybe they're on the ground and they're flapping sideways. So things like that to really consider.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they say if you find one, A, do not touch it. As of right now, there is no cases of this being zoonotic, so transferring from bird to human.
What's that word?
Zoonotic.
Zoonotic.
When a disease can transfer from animals to people and people to animals.
Okay.
But there,
we
again,
know you're not supposed to eat bats.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So, again, there's always a possibility. And then the next question I've been getting a lot is, what about, like, my chickens and my pet ducks and turkeys? Again, as of right now, there is no cases for domestic poultry.
Okay.
But, again, there's always a case. So
sure.
If you find one, the Ohio Division of Wildlife, they are asking you several things. If you find a dead bird, A, don't touch it. Contact, I haven't really found a good source, but either contact them, the Ohio Fish and Wildlife or Ohio Department of Natural Resources, or they said contact your local wildlife rehabilitator for here in Marion. That would be either Crow's Hollow in Richwood or the Ohio Bird Sanctuary up in Mansfield. But definitely contact them first before you bring this diseased bird, even if it's still alive.
Oh,
because, you know, they don't want to affect their birds. Now, it's not affecting every bird species, but it's hitting pockets of different species. So it's mainly what I've been reading is grackles and blue jays and cardinals. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. Just a lot of your other songbirds.
All three of those things I have in my backyard.
Yes, your typical songbirds. And I know there's probably a few more. Oh, robins, yeah, that's another one that had been hit a lot.
Keep naming all the animals I have in my backyard. Go ahead.
So the second thing that you can do, kind of like I was telling them, you know, right now we're in the COVID pandemic, is take down your bird feeders and your bird baths. And I know we love seeing the birds up close and personal. I mean, I love doing it because I can show my son. I love, you know, taking close-up pictures. But if you think about it, it's just like a tight room or a space, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those bird feeders and bird baths are encouraging all these birds to stay in a very close proximity to one another, and that's how this disease can spread. So, yes, ODNR is recommending to take it down and then also clean them out. So I think it's like one part bleach, nine parts water. So a very low solution of bleach.
Okay.
And as of now, keep them down. I know people have been asking, can I put them up? Can I put them up? Just not yet.
Okay. Well, we have a, you know what? I had the wrong microphone up, but that's all right. Oh. We were able to hear you, I think.
Oh, I think so.
Okay. Hang on. We have a phone call. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, is James live in the studio?
Yes. Were you having a hard time hearing him?
Yeah, it's kind of...
It's because I had the wrong microphone up.
Oh. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's a little bit better. Sounds like, Oh, you could listen to it, but it wasn't as enjoyable as listening to it clearer. Try it again.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
So I guess I better, should I explain
that
again?
Yeah, why don't you explain that again? Let me make sure I have the right microphone there now.
All right.
Yeah, I can hear you well now, so okay.
Okay. Oh. All right, there.
For some reason or other, when I knocked the phone off, okay, keep talking.
All right. So.
There you go.
So as I was mentioning earlier, that there is a new bird disease that is going around here in the eastern Midwest United States, and including in the state of Ohio. It's been here for probably about 2 to 3 months. We're not sure much about this new disease. Doesn't even have a name, or at least I haven't heard about it having a name. But again, we don't know if it's bacterial, if it's fungal, if it's viral. Again, we just don't know much about it. So what's the problem it's causing? It's causing these birds to get very sick, and then a lot of cases they are dying. And some of the symptoms of this new disease is it causes a thick crust layer around the eyes, and almost like a film, and basically glues their eyes shut. And then in some species, it's actually the eyes are sinking in into the head. The other symptom is that it's causing neurological issues. So if you're seeing a bird with abnormal behavior, so if it's flying in circles or just, acting really weird, probably on the ground, flopping it on the side, things like that. Now people say, what about running into windows? Even before this disease, I mean, that was always an issue. Just consider that yes, it could be part of that symptom, but it could be entirely something different. Like, cardinals are very defensive. They'll attack their own reflection.
Yeah.
So, I was telling Glenn that it's not every species of songbird, but it's just certain groups, grackles, blue jays, robins, cardinals, brown birds, or cowbirds, excuse me. Those are the ones at least I can remember on top of my head. You're wondering, what can I do to help my birds out with this new disease running around?
Buy them little masks?
Yeah, buy them little masks. It's funny, you said that when I post that on my social media on the Tallgrass Trail page, someone says something about like a mask mandate for birds. I know the one thing that people are not wanting to do, but again, it's for the birds, is putting down our bird feeders and bird baths. Because, I know we love doing it because we get to see these birds up close and personal. But if you think about it, it's kind of like our COVID situation right now that we're having in our current times. Those bird baths and bird feeders is a wonderful place for diseases to spread, because you got all these birds are all congregating really close to one another, and all you need is one diseased bird, and then that affects the rest.
Yeah.
Same goes with the bird baths. So please, please put them down.
Now, how about hummingbird things?
As of right now, I have not heard about hummingbirds, but it was
mine.
It was probably a good idea to do so.
Okay.
Now, the ODNR is recommending, yes, to put them down, but also clean them out.
Yeah.
Do one part bleach and 9 parts water, so a very low bleach solution. And, again, just keep those feeders down currently. Now, again, remember, we are in the summer season, as Glenn mentioned, midsummer. So, luckily, right now, there's a lot of natural food sources for these birds. I hope we get to learn more in the near future, because I know once fall starts, fall migration, and then winter, and that's, I know, where a lot of bird species are really depending on people for yeah. food source.
Well, now, I have a big perennial garden out in my front yard, a little romp, not big, a little one, but it has lots of flowers in it. I mean, tons of flowers.
Okay.
And so I leave them on all winter, even though it looks nasty.
Yeah.
I don't cut them back, because I understand that the birds actually use that area.
Yeah. A lot of finches and cardinals will eat the seeds.
Yeah. And I know a lady in the neighborhood that has sunflowers. And if they die, she just leaves them on the ground and lets the birds. She doesn't clean it all up, and that's good for the birds, right?
Yeah.
They love sunflowers.
Oh, yes. And you know what? You're talking about flowers, and I know I've mentioned many times, but
We're going to flora now.
Yes. You know, planting natives, you know, that's, you know, instead of putting your bird feeders out there, planting native plants is going to be very beneficial for not just your seed-bearing plants, but also, too, is attracting insects, which, you know, a lot of birds need to survive, and also for rearing their young.
There's that place out... out of town here that sells native plants.
Yes.
What's the name of that?
Natives in Harmony. It's just outside of the village of Marengo in Morrow County.
Yeah, and I plan on getting there. I haven't made it yet, but we're going to get out there. Now, there's a confusion about native plants.
Yeah.
There are plants, I believe, that you can get that are American plants, but they're not really from this area, is that
yes.
Right?
Yeah. there are a lot of nurseries, even here in Ohio, that they get their sources from other locations. There's probably the biggest native plant industry in the U.S. is, I think it's called Prairie Moon Seed. I think they're based on Wisconsin. So, yes, they have some familiar wildflower species that grow here in Ohio, but you got to remember their genetics are different, and those genetics are geared for Wisconsin environments. And you got to remember Wisconsin environment, Ohio environment is completely different. So, I mean, the blooming period could be
a lot different
climate.
Yeah, it's a different climate.
So even though, Columbine, that's the one that I know you can buy from that company. Well, again, our Columbine usually grows in about late spring. Well, in there, it could grow a lot later in the year. And your price, well, does that make a difference? It can with your pollinators, because if your pollinators are used to a certain time to having a certain plant species available to them, and it's available at a later time, well, that's hurting
confusing.
That.
Confusing.
Yeah, it's confusing, yeah. So definitely keep local genetics as close as possible. And that's what Gail Martin, who's the owner of Natives in Harmony, that's her focus, and that's all she does. She does locally Ohio genetic native plants.
Okay. Well, and it's, how do you get out there?
So there are a couple ways you can get out there. If you take 23 and get turn left there on 229, and you go through Ashley, and then you can hit Marengo, okay. And then you can hit 61 that way. And then there's a lot of other back roads.
Okay. Yeah. I won't get into that sort of thing.
Yeah,
cause that could...
yeah. Morrow County, it's fun, and she lives on a dirt road. So
wonderful.
Morrow County, we have a lot of dirt roads where we live.
Well, like I told you, my daughter-in-law, who lives in Worthington, goes up there rather regularly.
Yeah, and I probably met her.
That's cool. All right. Well, what animals are most active right now?
Right now, well, you're probably your favorite, the snakes.
Oh, lovely.
So, and then what I brought with me today.
Let's talk about
that. Turtles are pretty active right now. Mainly the painted turtles are mostly active. The snapping turtles were mostly active in June time. But I always like talking about them because, yes, you could see them out there. Right now, they're going to be hanging around the more pond environments. The reason why you probably saw more in June, because that's usually the females who are traveling across the roads or across our trail. What now?
Looking for boys?
With that, looking for boys and also laying eggs.
Oh, yeah, laying eggs.
So, snapping turtle is our largest turtle here in the state of Ohio. So,
is that the one you have in your hand is about, I'd guess, 12 to 14 inches?
Yes, it's
not
very big.
Is that a big one? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's like it's a
medium?
Medium size,
okay.
Yeah. It's one of the two species of turtles that you can harvest here in the state of Ohio. Snapping.
Harvest?
Yep.
You
can eat them. I have had turtle before. Yeah.
Okay.
Snapping turtles and soft-shell turtles. Now, here recently, they did make a rule. They have to be so big. I want to say the carapace or the top of the shell has to be, it's either 12 or 15 inches across. Definitely look up your fishing regulations. You can get those for free at Walmart or Myers.
That's governed by the fishing people?
Yes, from the Ohio Division of Wildlife.
So if you're out looking for those,
yes,
you can be pulled over by a wildlife manager and
a wildlife officer,
and he can say, which ones do you have, and let's go measure them.
Yeah, he can.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know they did that. I knew they do it with fish, but I didn't.
And while you're kind of talking about fish, if you're going to go in public waters, you do need a fishing license.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so if you want to get turtles and frogs in public waters, you do need a fishing license.
Now, is there a special endorsement that you have to get to go for those?
No. Okay. Luckily, in Ohio, all you need is a fishing license. Okay. But for like other species like deer, you have to have a hunting license and have the deer permit or deer tag.
Yeah.
Same like with turkey and all that. But yeah, luckily turtle, as of right now, turtle and frog, you don't need an additional endorsement.
None of those critters need to worry because I don't have any of those things. So. Last time I had a fishing license, I was probably in my 30s. So.
Oh, okay.
And I love fishing when I was younger, but just don't have the opportunity anymore.
Well, like you can always come out to the Tallgrass Trail.
There you go, But you know there's only one native lake in the entire state of Ohio, and that's Erie.
Yes, that it is.
Yeah, okay. The rest of them are just dammed up rivers.
Yeah, or man-made, yeah.
Yeah, or man-made. Course. Now, that looks pretty light. Is it?
It is.
I assume it must be pretty hard to protect them, right?
Oh, yeah. So it's kind of funny. So the top part, yes, it is pretty hard. But then if you ever flip them over on their stomachs, I'll show you the understanding. It's just a spine.
Okay.
And his rib cage.
Oh, that's where his spine is.
Yes, yeah. I have a joke for you, but I'll give it away. I always tell the kids, I say, if you find a turtle without a shell, is it naked or is it homeless? And they always think, either give me one answer or the other. Every once in a while, one kid will get the joke. And I say, well, it's neither. It's dead. And they're like, what? And then I show them this, and I say, oh, turtles grow with their shells, not out of their shells.
I bet very few people know that their spine is actually fused to the shell.
Yes, and their rib cage.
Oh, yeah, I see that. Yep. Oh, my goodness. That's interesting. Well, we've got a caller. Let's go to the phone. Hang on. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, as far as a license for turtles and frogs,
yes.
There's no such a thing in the state of Ohio. You need a license to obtain them anywhere.
Oh, okay. Now, all states have that type of license?
Well, we're talking about Ohio.
Yeah, every state's different.
I can't tell you about Hawaii, but I...
Oh, I thought maybe...
We're talking about Ohio right here that, they're on land. A turtle can go from... across the road, he can be on a different type of land, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Private land or public land. And it don't make any difference. Same way with the frog. He can jump across the road also. So kind of have to watch that a little bit.
I think you and I need to go on a fact.
It's in the Ohio fishing law, so whenever they obtain a license for fishing, maybe and maybe not, but a lot of people think, oh, this is private. I don't have to do that. Well, you do.
Yes. You're right. On private land, no, you don't need it. But I believe on public land, like Big Island Wildlife Area, you do.
Okay.
Is he off?
No, I think we lost
him. Oh, I think we lost him.
Well, anyway, I was going to ask him to go on a road trip with me to Hawaii to find out if we need that sort of thing.
Yeah, he's right. Every state's different. So some states are not even allowed to do it. Other states, you need probably an additional endorsement. Every state has their own rules and regulations.
Yeah.
But yes, what he was trying to say, like private, if you had a private pond, you don't need a fishing license.
Now, you can't get a private pond stocked.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, stocked.
Right, stocked by the government. But I suppose people stock their own by going and catching fish.
There's a lot of private companies.
Oh, there are.
There's actually one on 309 just outside of Caledonia.
Okay, I bet they make
I can't remember if it's still technically in Marion or Crawford County. It's like right at the border.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a fishery out there.
So you can go get a bucket full of fish and throw it in your lake. I'm sure it's not done in a bucket, but...
Yeah, now like for us, for our lake, because we're going to hopefully eventually stock the lake in the future when it needs it, because when ODNR came out a few years ago, they assessed it and said that it needs stocked.
Okay.
But when it does, that's why we signed something with ODNR, the same that, once they stock it, that they need to... fishing regulations.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I couldn't think.
That's all right. We have another caller. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the air. Oh, hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, you're back.
We lost you. Yeah. We lost you.
Have James check with his Ohio Division of Wildlife fishing laws, and it'll say in that, James, it's not private pond. You still have to have a license. license to get a turtle or frogs.
Okay, that's interesting. But not, but you can fish away at your own leisure, right? But you can't.
Yeah,
you
the
can't.
Fish, as long as it does, for fishing in a pond, as long as it don't have a tributary going in and out of it.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Or wings.
Or wings.
All right. Thank you very
Glenn,
much.
It isn't funny.
No, I know there are ones with wings.
Hey, Glenn, if you want to do it, they fork out a pretty good fine for you.
Well, I'm going to avoid animals with unusual appendages like wings on fish. So. There are fish down in outside of Chicago in the Chicago River that actually jump up and fly into boats and stuff.
Those are the Asian carps.
Yeah.
Yes. And down at the Ohio River, and they can smack people real hard and give them a concussion.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. That's interesting. And you can understand the logic of that. That turtle can go anywhere it wants to.
Yeah, yeah. They usually don't travel very far, usually within a few miles of where they were born.
Yeah, but still off of your property. Yeah. So if you're stalking your own lake, you really don't have any control over the critters that walk off.
Yeah, very true.
All right, cool. All right, well, you did say we had plenty of snakes going on right now.
Yes, yes, a lot of snakes. Now, again, probably yesterday you probably wouldn't have seen much because, again, they were trying to keep cool.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what is a predator for a snapper?
So it's funny you mentioned that. So when they're usually that full-grown adult size, other than people, there's really not much. Now, maybe if it was on land, and if a coyote was trying to get into it, because as I was mentioning earlier, what's actually funny, the top shell looks very thick, very strong, which it is, but when you flip them over, their bottom part of their shell, or the plastron, is actually, it's very small.
Uh-huh.
Versus other turtles, it covers their entire belly region for the snapping turtles.
But not on snapping turtles.
It's like maybe a quarter part of his body, and then the rest is all his flesh of his arms and his ligaments.
So with big claws like a coyote, they can rip the bottom
off.
They
could, yeah, and that's what some predators like to do. They'll try to flip them over, and they'll get them that way.
Okay.
It's the same hunting strategy as what fishers, which is a type of weasel, they do the porcupines. Fishers are the only active predator for a porcupine, and that's their hunting strategy. They flip them over, and they go for the belly to kill them and start eating them that way because they don't want to get those prickles on them. Yeah.
Are there porcupines in Ohio?
There used to be a very large abundance of porcupines since Ohio was mainly forested, but by 1904, they believed they were extirpated or kicked out of the state of Ohio.
Oh, poor porcupines.
But there have been some reports, some sightings. There was one in Toledo a few years ago by the Metro Parks. They believe somebody dumped that off probably from around Michigan. And then a lot of times you'll hear around northeastern Ohio.
That would have been a good name for the Indians. They could have been the porcupines.
The porcupines, yeah, there you go. Yeah,
instead of the guardian.
Yeah.
I like the guardian. I didn't when I first heard it, but after I found out why, I kind of like it. Okay.
Oh, yes, back to what they eat. So when they're small, when they're first hatched, oh, my goodness,
everything eats it.
And even including some insects.
Really?
Yeah, and you wouldn't think about that. Yeah, in our waters, even here in Marion County, we have this one. It's called the giant water bug. It's about the size of a half dollar, if you remember those old coins back in the day. And they have a really cool hunting strategy. So what they'll do is they will attach themselves, and they have kind of two mouth parts. They have, like, this spear-like mouth part, and they inject this liquid into their prey, and then turns their prey's insides into mush or into a liquid, and then he kind of squishes his mouth into a straw, and then he slurps it up. I know it sounds graphic, but
my wife always says to me, you know, I love nature, but I hate nature.
Yeah. Sometimes some baby dragonfly species will attack baby snapping turtles.
I'll be darned.
So they have a very high mortality rate when they're little, but then once they get to that older adult, very few things will mess with them.
That's kind of true with most animals, isn't it? That the young animals are the ones that are eating.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my. Okay, well, I don't know what to say after thinking about
it. That graphic you mentioned.
Slurped out.
That'd be a horrible way to go.
Yeah, it would be a bad way to go. All right, well, let's see. I completely threw everything out of my head that I was going to ask you. Have we ever figured out why we didn't get very many cicada? Or,
Some people aren't. I haven't found a true answer, but some people say it's the frost line. Apparently, we get a harder frost of this part of Marion, but then like we got they got them in Green Camp and Prospect and LaRue, and that's not far away from here.
Nor is Delaware. No, Delaware butts up to us.
Yeah. So. I really haven't really found a good answer.
I'm not unhappy that we didn't have hordes of those flying all over the place, because I've been in a infestation, I've been there down in Athens 17 years ago, and it wasn't fun being bumped in to all, especially a person that has the phobias that I have about critters.
I was living in Delaware County. I was in middle school when they were out.
Oh, okay.
So I remember they were everywhere.
Yeah, they were in Delaware. So maybe that's why Delaware still had a lot this year, I believe, right?
Yeah, because I think I mentioned last month, they'll lay about 300 to 500 eggs, one female will.
Now, will any of them live? I keep seeing a very awkward, very large insect, not the same one, but yeah. I keep seeing one or two in the air. Will they live longer? Some of them.
Oh, what you're probably seeing is the annual cicadas.
Oh,
the ones you'll see every year.
Oh, we have those.
Yes, yeah, we get ones we get every year. They're green. They're green and white.
Okay, no red eyes.
No red eyes. They're like black, okay. And they make that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's not that whang.
And I hear that good sound effects.
Yeah.
I hear that when I go out and take my dog for a walk at 11 o'clock at night.
Or dogwood cicadas, that's another one.
Dogwood cicadas, okay.
Yeah, that's another name you call.
All right, well, speaking of dogwood, do we have anything that's infesting our plants this year? Like trees, like the ash tree.
The ash, as of right now, I haven't heard anything abnormal. Yeah, the ash tree, that... Unfortunately, I think that's a battle we've lost.
Yeah.
The first site was in Ohio was in February of 2002.
Wow.
So it's been here for 20 years.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I ask that is I walk most days. I either walk or I mow. And on my walk, I've gone by all sorts of huge trees that are being cut down in our neighborhood.
Oh, is it just certain limbs?
Well, some of them, they start on limbs, but I've
noticed, then eventually the whole tree.
Yeah. And now I have a tree out in my front yard that one half of it doesn't have leaves on it.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason why I mention that, because what the adults do, of the 17-year-old cicadas, they'll extract the sap out of the tree. When you got hundreds and hundreds of them all on one branch, eventually it kills that branch off.
Okay.
So, because I live in Eastern Monroe County, we had our cicada fund about 2-3 years ago, and I at the time I was traveling around Mansfield, and I know a lot of the city employees were cutting down a lot of the branches.
Okay. Now there are several of these trees that I've noticed have been cut down, and I'm not saying one or two. I'm talking a dozen. Big, huge trees. Many of them, they started by cutting the limbs. And then a couple of them, they apparently gave up and just cut the whole thing down. Now, when they cut the whole thing down, you can tell the tree is pretty healthy because there's no rot in it or anything like that. I guess they just think they're unsightly once they cut some of the limbs off.
Well, that, and eventually, I mean, once you cut that branch, you're basically exposing a womb.
Yeah.
A wound, and I mean, then that introduces new diseases, other insects that come in, and then eventually, I mean, they'll burrow into the heartwood or the center of the tree and affect that, and then once that's gone, that tree is dead.
That brings up, and I guess we got 10 minutes, so it gives me time to ask you this. I watch a lot of gardening shows.
Okay.
I'm boring as all get out, but I do watch, and not too long ago, I was watching one of my favorites. And the gentleman said that you shouldn't put that black stuff on when you cut a tree's limb, because the tree actually develops its own protection from those limbs better than that black stuff.
Which
is tar, I think.
Some tar, or other chemicals. But no, he's absolutely right. So, when you cut or drill a hole in a tree, think about it, your body, you know, when you get a cut.
I don't let people drill holes in too often. But.
Well, you get the idea. Well, when you get a cut, you know, your body heals. Well, when that tree's getting drilled or cut or anything like that.
Oh, it gets a scab.
Yeah, basically a scab, yeah.
I'll be darned.
But the problem with those chemicals, I mean, they're not natural. So that, that tree, even though you're trying to help that tree, it's probably going to hurt it in the long run.
It's saying, but, what the heck is this? I've got to grow around it.
But basically, yeah, and just like you mentioned with what he said, it has its own immunity. I mean, able to heal itself.
Yeah. I was shocked because as a kid, I always did that. I thought I was being a good steward of nature, and I was being very bad. Now, this year's gardens have done very well, and I've learned not to be unhappy about yanking up dead species. I got to the point where I wouldn't, if a plant that I bared fruit that didn't bear fruit, I was afraid to pull it up because I didn't want to hurt it. But now I've learned if they're not bearing fruit and they're not doing any good, pull them up and put something else in, and that's what I've been doing. But I have found that I have some sort of critter in my backyard that absolutely loves to rip my tomatoes off of my tomato plant. And I might yank the head off of that animal if I could ever find. He took 3 red tomatoes off of the and left the 2 green ones.
Huh. I made a tomato hornworm.
No, it had little teeth marks
on it. Oh, teeth marks. Oh, I would say it could be either a squirrel, a chipmunk, or a shrew.
A shrew. Now, what? There's a critter that's like a mouse that's called a vol?
A vole.
Vole. Are they also, do they do that sort of thing?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Now, do we have them in this area?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what they used to call field mice?
I guess you could call, yeah. A lot of times you find them in hay fields.
Okay. Do they look like a mouse?
A little bit. They're a little, in my opinion, they're a little chunkier than than mice.
Maybe that's the critter that we have in our kitchen.
Well, typically you don't find foals in buildings. Usually it's your house mouse, a deer mouse. Okay. You'll find in buildings or structures.
Well, if he's listening, he better be careful because they're coming after him.
Oh, jeez.
And I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Shoot. I had all these questions that Buddy gave me that I forgot to write down. Are you having any? Are you having good success with your kids?
Your kiddos? Hikes? Yeah. Oh yes, our kiddos at the park. Yes, has been very successful this summer.
I love announcing that every time.
Awesome. We have it. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
No thanks intended. I love little kids. So, what do you do?
So we pick a theme every Friday. Lately, it's been animal related. So butterflies. This Friday or tomorrow is going to be about reptiles and. We did animal camouflage. So what we do is we always like to start out with our songs. We do show and tell, which is basically a nature discovery.
You have songs?
Oh, yes, we have songs, yes, my wonderful singing voice. And then we talk about the main theme for like a little bit, and we include with our stories. We usually have fiction and non-fictional stories to show the kids. And then our what we call craft activity time. Sometimes it's related to the subject, sometimes it's not. And then usually when that's over, we always end on a hike.
And it's for preschool kids,
preschool,
right?
Kindergarten age, so 3 to 5, 3 to 6 years old.
Roughly how many are you getting?
On average, we're getting about 8 kids.
Good.
So
good.
As you probably saw, not last Friday, but the Friday before, we got bombarded with so much demand. So we've been very fortunate. The Salvation Army here in Marion has been very generous in donating goodie bags and different craft supplies and things for this program. They just reached out to me and they said, hey, we love what you're doing. Can we get involved? I said, sure. So what happened 2 weeks ago, they were offering these tyke balls. They're like the big rubber balls and they have a handle where you can bounce.
Yeah.
And I guess they're very popular with kids. Well, I guess they were announcing that they were giving them away at our program. And I kid you not, Glenn, in 2 hours, I had probably 20 moms contacting me. And then we just got so much demand that, unfortunately, I had to turn away six moms because we're just very limited on our supplies with our crafts and all. So please register.
Come back.
Yes, definitely come back, but definitely register, especially if you have social media. That's definitely the easier way to get a hold of us.
Now, do you require that a parent be with the child?
Yes. A parent, grandparent, older sibling, babysitter, it doesn't matter. So, yes. Unfortunately, when I started this program 5 years ago, not a lot, but we had a couple people who were like, thought that they could drop their kids and go
babysitting.
But we can't do that because when I first started this program, I asked our local attorney about that because someone said, oh, you had to be accredited to be a preschool program. And I asked him, I said, what's this all about? He said, as long as you have a normal program when parents are there, he said, you're fine. But he said, as soon as you drop them off, he says, you have to be an accredited preschool. And we're nowhere near to be an accredited preschool.
Yeah, but they'll learn a lot of stuff.
That's true.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the couple of walks you and I and other people have gone on. And the amount of stuff that at 75 that I didn't know is astounding. But little kids, I assume you have some little kids that eat it up and others that kind of zone out.
Yes, I would say, yes.
Now, would you say most of them are very interested?
I would say about 90%, 95% are into it.
Do you have kids like me that are kind of phobic about picking up animals?
Yeah, we do. We do have a few.
What do you do if you have a little guy that doesn't want to touch a worm?
If they don't want to touch it, I respect them, and I always give them an opportunity, sometimes a couple opportunities, but if they're not wanting, I just move on to the next kid.
Very good.
So tomorrow, as long as everything's so good, we are going to have a guest speaker.
Good.
If you remember a few weeks ago when somebody dropped off chickens at the trail, I don't know if you saw it on social.
I didn't see
it. Unfortunately, because we're a park, people drop off animals.
Without telling you?
Yes.
They just dumped them.
So they dumped these three chickens. They were egg-laying chickens. And I was like, oh,
there's
no.
There's breakfast.
Yeah, there's breakfast. So I announced on our Facebook page, I said, if anybody wants these free chickens, go for it. They're yours. This young man, he's from the Richdale district. His name's Jonah. I have to look up what his last name was. He just got done with a track meet, and he pulled up in the trailhead, and he said, I'll take those chickens. And I'm like, oh, okay. So it took him a little bit, but he got them all. And
Where did they dump them?
I mean, they're at the trailhead.
Were they just wandering around?
They were just wandering around.
So he had to chase them down.
He did. He had to get a fishing net and chase them down. So then his dad reached out to me and said, hey, my son actually does like his own little reptile exhibit programs. He said, you know, could he do some programs for you? And I said, yeah, would he be willing to help teach preschool kids? And so, yeah, he's going to come out with live reptiles, and we're going to have a little reptile show with the kiddos.
I hope not a nasty reptile.
It sounds like turtles and snakes.
Yeah, okay. No salamanders now.
No salamanders.
Are they gone for the season?
Like the one I showed you, he's dormant basically, or hiding under a log or rock.
Sally.
Sally. Yeah. But there are some that are active in creeks and streams during the summer season.
Okay, well, hey, we're going to take a break here for about 15 minutes. We're talking with James Anderson, the Marion County naturalist, and learning all sorts of stuff like we always do when James comes in. And we'll be back after a few announcements and also after our news and weather and so forth. And I'm not quite sure. I'm going to have to look on my phone to find out what we're going to talk about because my new executive director buddy did not write it down, and he's going to have hell to pay when I get home. All right, we'll be right back. Bye. Hello? Apparently I've hit the wrong button, so hang in there with me.